As politicians talk about what to do with Osama bin Laden if he's captured, the anti-Taliban allies in the war in Afghanistan face wider questions about the treatment of prisoners. And however fierce the battle, there are still rules dictating how prisoners must be cared for. Joining us to talk about the laws that govern the fair treatment of prisoners of war is Ruth Wedgwood, a professor of international law and diplomacy at Johns Hopkins and at Yale. Welcome. Thanks for coming
in. Thank you.
Last week, a Northern Alliance officer, in response to a question about what would be done with prisoners, with Taliban prisoners, told the New York Times this, quote, "First we talk to them, then," and he drew his finger across his throat in a gesture of cutting. Doesn't the killing of captured prisoners violate law, international law?
Now, there is a very severe and age-old standard saying that when prisoners surrender, if they genuinely do surrender, then you have to take their surrender and treat them humanely. You cannot cut their throats.
So this is, when you say an ancient law, this predates the Geneva Convention, is that right?
Well, there have been codifications of the law of war at various times, and the one that most Americans are familiar with is the 1949 set of Geneva Conventions, one of which deals with prisoners of war. But there's a customary law of war that goes much farther back than that. It was codified at an earlier stage in the American Civil War.
Well, what responsibility do you think the U.S. has to ensure that its partners, in this case the Northern Alliance, treats prisoners of war fairly?
Sure. Well, as a matter of prudence and good taste, clearly we should be advising them, urging them, demanding of them that they treat prisoners humanely. If you address it as a strict question of law and legal liability, there is a doctrine in the law of war called command responsibility, that if troops are under your command, you then have a firm legal duty to monitor what they do and to repress any violations that they commit. You have to put them on trial if they mistreat their prisoners, for example. In an alliance situation where it's kind of a horizontal collaboration instead of a vertical wiring diagram, it's a little trickier. You may not be actually able to force them to do what you want, and you, technically speaking, probably aren't hiring them. But since the sensibility of the war is not going to be picked apart by lawyers, but rather by a general impression of how the war is fought, I think it behooves us to be quite earnest in our advice to Northern Alliance folks and to the remainder of the alliance that they must treat prisoners humanely. And frankly, too, at the end of a war, anybody who is on the battlefield has a duty to search for offenders, for people who commit grave breaches, whether it's their own side or the other side, or an ally. So ultimately, it would put us in the very awkward position of having to consider for war crimes prosecutions our own allies.
That would seem to be very unlikely, no?
Well, it's the Geneva Conventions are fairly unyielding in the duty of putting on trial anybody who is a grave offender, commits a grave breach of the law of war. In practice, it doesn't happen very often, but in theory, it's a treaty obligation. I suppose the Northern Alliance could claim that they're not signatories to the treaty, but still, it's pretty well worked into the sense of what is customary.
Professor Wedgwood, you already gave us a little capsule history of talking about how the kind of conventions of treating prisoners goes way back, although it was codified beginning in the Civil War. Any time before that?
Oh, sure. A wonderful colleague of mine, Ted Merrin, has done wonderful books, for example, on the law of war and chivalry in the plays of Shakespeare, or if you go back to the Bible. The law of war can get significantly harsher as you go back in time. There was a period, for example, when if a city didn't surrender, when you lay siege to it, you could then punish the city for having failed to take your offer of surrender and kill all the women and children as well as the men in the city. So it's gotten more humanitarian with time. But nonetheless, the idea that there is law in war is a very ancient idea.
Well, now that it looks like the Taliban is surrendering, does the U.S. have a claim to these prisoners that are captured by the Northern Alliance?
Well, prisoners don't belong to anybody. Typically, the victor on the battlefield will take the prisoners and has duties toward them, but doesn't have to turn them over to anybody else in particular. And this is going to be a murky war where, in some elements, it's international, since we're there, and in some elements, it's going to be seen as a civil war, since it's the Northern Alliance against the Taliban in their own country. But, no, the prisoners don't belong to us. I do think, though, for our own foreign policy reasons, we're going to want to urge the turnover of the leadership to us, because amongst them are going to be many people we're interested in to try to understand and uproot the full al-Qaeda conspiracy, and just turning people over for detention is not going to serve our purposes of figuring out how bin Laden has laid down his tracks.
Ruth Wedgwood is a professor of international law and diplomacy at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies and at Yale University. Thank you, Professor Wedgwood.
Thank you very much.